Broadcasting from the ESPN Radio Studios in Tallahassee, Florida, and in partnership with the JoeBucksFan.com Podcasting Network, you're locked in with the Scuttlebucks, Jeff Cameron, and Tom Lang. Tampa Bay Buccaneer Talk starts now. Here's ESPN Tallahassee's Jeff Cameron.
Always fun to perform, talk about, discuss the Scuttlebucks and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after a win, right? Good to be back with you. I'm Jeff Cameron. Tom Lang is here in studio as well as the Bucs get a much, much needed win in a race. Not necessarily a race, I should say. Get the bad taste out of their mouth after that disappointing performance in which they were bludgeoned by the Minnesota Vikings in every way imaginable. And there were enough bad things, bad elements of what occurred up in Minneapolis to go around. Criticisms that were fair of the quarterback, the offensive line, and certainly, and most prominently, the defense. But they bounce back here and get a big win. It was nothing short of exhilarating. It was frustrating as points were left on the field. You got a kicker who I actually thought was worthy of merriment during the last episode. He will fit uniquely into misery this time around. Nonetheless, you get this win, and I thought the Bucs, certainly they came out looking great, had opportunities, kind of salt the game away. Make certain you understand that 14 to nothing, 17 to nothing, very different things than 13-7, 13. You know, when you see this thing whittle away, three scores is a big deal, and when you've left those on the field, it's very, very frustrating.
Yeah, to me, again, this was a game that didn't have to be the way it was, but it taught you something about who you got, you know, because it's much like the Minnesota game when I said you had no right to be in that game, down 31-17 with the ball in your hand in Minnesota territory. That's not indicative of what we watched up to that point. However, you were in the game. So here's a chance to do something about it and put more pressure on Minnesota. In the same way, this week, the Giants had no right to be in the game.
I agree.
They had no right to have the lead late in the fourth quarter. And you could talk about, you know, the process and why that happened and falling short situationally, and I know we will. But it gave an opportunity for the quarterback to rise up, to be the leader of the team, and to deliver a victory with 3 minutes to go on the clock. And that's exactly what Jameis Winston did. You didn't criticize him last week for the Minnesota performance. Well, you have to praise him this week because that was a brass ones performance from number three all day long. That was an offensive performance that we need, and it's an offensive performance, dare I say, that this team is going to need a few more times at minimum if playoffs are really in the future.
5 for 5 on the final drive was nothing short of cool, calm, collected, and brilliant. Really was very good all afternoon. This will be described by the local media in Tampa as a decent to average performance because I don't know what he has to do for them to describe him as a franchise quarterback or as great. But it's certainly never enough down there when you read the kinds of pieces that they had coming into this game. Comparative to the pieces that run after, in which there's very little mention of how good Jameis was in this game. But it's good to hear Bill Belichick, who has an all-time great quarterback right there next to him, say that he doesn't know what else Jameis would have to do to be considered a franchise quarterback.
Well, considering he's 23, thrown for 4,000 yards twice. I mean, listen, I was a critic last week, and as it turned out, as we were talking, it sounded like I was the one that was killing the quarterback, and you're the one that's defending the quarterback. There are times he needs to be ripped, but you know what? If you want to be on balance, let's just put it this way. If you want to be on balance, you may want to write positive things after a performance such as this. And I know Stroud penned a column that said Jameis gave the opportunity, you know,
For redemption
for Nick Folk. And that is 100% true. But, I mean, if you're going to write seven different ways, exaggerating just barely, on Sunday, on game day, why this quarterback is not a franchise quarterback, he turns in the performance he does on Sunday against the Giants, wills you to victory. And then on Monday's conference call with Bill Belichick, you got to ask him, well, what more does Jameis need to do to be a franchise quarterback? You're essentially asking after a performance where the quarterback takes a big step forward, no turnovers, 300-plus yards, another game-winning drive in a game where they had to have it. You know, you're asking Bill Belichick, what's wrong with Jameis? I mean, are you kidding me?
It's not what's surprising, wrong with Jameis? Though, and it's funny, your ire is raised in a moment like that because you're mad at two things. You're mad at failed journalism, and you're mad at the lack of credit where credit's due. I agree with that, but man, I've grown accustomed to this. I grow to expect it. I don't really, I mean, I appreciate that you're holding them to a higher standard and asking them to do better, but they won't. Because there's an agenda there, Tom, and we've known this for a long time. And until they finally wipe that slate clean and understand that what they think he is or what may or may not have happened in his past, until they get beyond that, then you know, it's not going. You're not going to see that. You're not going to see the articles that you want. You're not going to see the recognition of what he's done.
Just understand what you're consuming, if you're still consuming that particular outlet. Just understand that, because, again, I'm the guy last week who said he's got to do more. This offense has to prove that it can score in the upper 20s, lower 30s in a non-blowout situation. Well, it did. You can't blame the offense for Nick Folk not being able to hit a couple of field goals, an extra point. Then you go for two trying to chase points, and you don't get that one. So that's 8 points at minimum. Then Dirk Koetter calls a short side sweep to Jacquizz Rodgers.
Yeah, the whole thing about that. That's actually a mind-numbing call.
The lack of execution there costs you another 4 points. So there's 12 points to leave on the board. The offense scores upper 20s, lower 30s.
I actually was surprised they overturned the touchdown, too, on a beautiful play from Winston. That throw to take advantage of the opportunity there that they call back and say, he's down, and then, you know.
Well, I think the hard part there, I got into an argument with my friends that were at the stadium, and one was a Giant, one was a Buck, so you can imagine where they stood on the play. And, you know, I don't want to make a huge thing out of this, but it's not about what you know. It's about what you can prove.
Right. There in that situation, you have to be able to find irrefutable evidence, right?
There was no compelling down-the-line angle that shows that Mike Evans, that a piece of the ball didn't touch one blade of grass that's painted white on the front of the plane for the end zone.
Right.
So to me, the call on the field should have stood there.
You mean at the time that he's touched, right?
At the time that he's touched and he's down by contact. Yeah, there's no compelling evidence there. But at the same time, it's a half a yard. You punch it in, you get your touchdown. So the offense responded this week. Did Jameis play perfectly? No. There are a lot of throws that are behind receivers, and he and DeSean Jackson still need to work on some things, and that's its own issue that for another, you know, moment. But I mean, God, if the kid responds and he gets you a win, where
you
the
may
hell is
recognize
the balance?
It. Yeah, let me do this too, though. If we're going to send out roses to Jameis for the game that he had, and he did have a good one, and he deserves the praise, and I understand the reason for you pointing the spotlight over there. Brent Grimes, man. You know, that guy obviously means the world to this defense. Not only do they compete better, but they look worlds better when he's on the field. There's a competence and a level of excellence that they're able to meet. Maybe not every possession, every series, but they play to a much higher level, and that has to do with his acumen and expertise and professionalism. But it also has to do with the confidence that he instills in those around him, knowing that you know he's going to do what he needs to do. So I can just worry about my assignment.
Yeah, if you want to make a case for the most important player on the defense, and you want to make the case for Brent Grimes, here's a compelling evidence. Kwon and Levante David don't play in this game. You got a rookie who's really performing well in Kendall Beckwith.
Yeah, yes, you do, man.
That's great. That's a great storyline. But the biggest difference is when 24 is on the field. I mean, dude, there are times, I know he's not the tallest player in the world, and that's the knock on him, but it looks like he's a tapestry draped over some of the best receivers in the league. He'll lose his fair share of battles, but the targets are obviously going to go towards the Odell Beckhams of the world throughout the game, because you got to get him involved. It's just a completely different look and feel, and the defense did more than enough. If Nick Folk could make a couple of field goals and you could punch it in a situation where instead of, you're right, coming out the gates, instead of being up 13-7 and feeling like you didn't walk away with everything, 17-7 is a hell of a lot different.
It's a much different game.
Stadium feels different.
Much different game. Everybody does.
You call the game differently.
I remember thinking in the moment, well, this has the feeling of one of those games that it's going to come down to the wire that ought not. Just know when you leave points on the field in the league, man.
Well, and Eli's good enough. I mean, we can argue about elite versus average, but he's good enough. There's no doubt about that. And the Giants found the running game, and I know, well, we didn't even talk about this, but I know you felt this way.
Well, you know how I feel about Gallman.
Exactly.
And I said in the draft, I love him.
When they started giving the ball to Wayne Gallman, I know it in your heart, you thought, oh, they found their guy.
Well, I got nervous because I know what he is. And, you know, for those that are new to this podcast, we cover Florida State on a daily basis, and obviously we get to see a lot of Clemson. And Wayne Gallman for Clemson is a guy that I thought was the heart and soul of that team last year. I understand what Deshaun Watson was. And I had a chance to talk to Dabo Swinney at the ACC kickoff. I interviewed their head coach for a good 20 minutes. And one of the things we talked about was Wayne Gallman, who's a former linebacker, by the way. And he instills an attitude and a toughness And the Giants didn't have that. And then they go to him, and I went, oh, no, I forgot he's on this team.
Right.
And then that began to happen.
And it's not like he's going to be Adrian Peterson the second.
No, he's just good, though. He's their guy. They need to stick with him.
But he's a plus player.
He's a son of a bitch is what he is. He's really good.
Well, yeah, and the broadcast described him as smooth and shifty. He's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about?
Oh, he's mean.
That guy, if there's contact, he ends up moving forward.
Always.
Through the contact.
And he's actually shifty enough.
Right, it's not like he isn't.
Yeah, no, he's shifty enough.
The trademark for him is his toughness, not his elusiveness.
They found their guy. If they're smart, they'll stick with him. He's a good player. That was worrisome when that started to happen. Hands raised to the sky,
yeah.
Palms to the heaven. Oh, no, they found it.
Well, and consider, too, back to the defense and the defensive back play. I mean, you know, with the lack of pass rush still. I mean, McCoy came out of this game like a man on fire. Holy cow. He took over the game for the first few drives.
Proud of him, yeah.
And that should not go overlooked because that destroyed everything the Giants were trying to do. I think weather played a factor here, too, because it was raining heavily, so they were going to run the ball a little bit more. And McCoy just absolutely took it over for a couple of drives. But if you can't get to the quarterback, and yet...
And they can't.
You have Brent Grimes out there. You don't feel like it's hopeless because he at least is going to lock down one guy. The question is, when you go against offenses that have three or four weapons or a truly elite quarterback, how much is Brent Grimes really going to make a difference if he can't get home?
Here's your problem and or victory for the moment, and you turn right around now and have to play the Patriots, but this is, once again, that NFC South we've seen before where, damn it, man, the sledding is brutal. You could not have guessed that the New Orleans Saints, after starting 0-2, would be 2-2 and an emerging defense. And they've played exceptionally well on defense for the better part of 2.5 games now. I did say to you during the week leading up, I thought they'd beat the Dolphins handily, and they did. Now, that's no great shakes these days. The Dolphins are a mess. But the Saints are really playing well defensively. You already know what Drew Brees is. You already know about the offensive weapons. So they've got something going. The Carolina Panthers, until this past week against the Patriots, haven't really looked very good, certainly not on offense. They've looked very good on defense, but they have not looked good on offense at all. And then they get the get right against the Patriots defense and get a win. And they're 3-1 for as bad as Cam Newton has played this year. And I know he had his first good game. And, of course, the Falcons are the Falcons, and they lose to Buffalo, who might actually be a decent team. But Atlanta's 3-1, and you know they're going to score and have a good season. So keeping pace here at 2-1, played one fewer game, was really, really vital.
Yeah, I mean, Atlanta wins that game if either Julio or Mohamed Sanu are still in the receiver rotation, but you lose both of them, and all of a sudden...
Tragic.
Well, yes, it
certainly is. I was devastated to see that, yeah.
It hurts my soul.
Terrible to see them lose like that.
But I know we'll do it next week, not this week, a little W's and L's for the, you know, second quarter of the season. But that schedule looks a lot tougher now, doesn't it?
If the rest of the conference is going to go back to the days where everybody's over 500, yeah.
Well, I mean, you're talking about your division, then you're talking about the Buffalo game up in Buffalo that looks a little bit more difficult now. You're playing the Lions, and, you know, earlier in the year you'd say, well, I don't know. The Lions defense looks pretty good, too. So you're going to have to steal a game or two that you don't think, by and large, you have a chance to win, perhaps tomorrow night, Thursday night, whenever you're listening to this, is that game.
Well, I think you can certainly move the football. Everybody has against the Patriots, and you're coming off a really good offensive performance across the board, and you're able to get your running back back. You know, Doug Martin, I said before the year, you did too. I think everybody understood. Hold your breath. You're going to have virtually no running game to an average at best running game, primarily going to the quiz there, who is what he is. You know, you get that game out of him against the Giants. That's good. That's about the best you can hope for until you get Doug Martin back. Now you get him back. So you went 2-1 in the three games you played without Doug Martin. That's a big damn deal. Better than 1-2 by a long shot, and gives you a fighting chance to be in this thing throughout the course of the year. I don't know week to week anymore, and I say this at the beginning of every year, really, what is a game you don't expect to win and a game you expect to lose? They're one and the same to me anymore. Or that you expect to win. I think you can win every game in the NFL and you can lose every game in the NFL almost equally anymore. I know that sounds absurd, but, I mean, just look around this league. You see it all the time. And look at the Jets. The Jets have now moved to 2-2. And I don't know, did anybody look worse than the Jets the first 2 weeks? I mean, it's hard to think of anybody looking as damn sorry as the Jets did. And short of you playing Cleveland, is there anybody right now you go, that's a win? I mean, there's just nobody like that. You wouldn't say that. You wouldn't say that's a win against You wouldn't say, if the Bucs had to travel out to the 0-4 Chargers, would you just chalk that up as a victory? No.
No.
No. And you wouldn't right now against Cincinnati.
Look at the Rams.
The Rams, yeah, they're 3-1. None of these teams would you say that about. I can't find one. I can't name a single team.
Well, I mean,
other than Cleveland.
Consider this, too. I mean, you know, Chicago's making a quarterback change this week, and they're going to Trubisky. They're a play away from beating Atlanta in week one.
They did beat the Steelers.
Right. So they could be 2-2 with a road win against the Steelers.
And they got housed by the Bucs.
Right. And they got housed last week by the Packers, too.
Yeah.
But just consider, they're a play away from being 2-2. And then all of a sudden, you're talking about in Chicago, well, we have a road win against the Steelers. We're 2-2. This is way better than we thought. Glennon's doing A-OK.
The point, it's exactly the point. Minnesota's 2-2. And they made the Bucs look bad in every aspect of football.
Made the Saints look bad.
And now here they sit. You know, this is a team that last week scored 7 points against Detroit. And I know Dalvin Cook went down. They weren't going to win that game anyhow. They couldn't move the football. They were shut down in that game. It's impressive. This is a weird league. It's a salary cap league. Week to week, what you watch is, teams you are fairly certain are bad. Turn around and win a game against a team you thought was pretty good.
Well, I mean, if you're the Giants, too, you're 0-4, right?
Yep.
Do you really believe you're worse than the Jets? I mean, I know what the record says.
I don't think they are. I mean, they could have had the Eagles beat. They lose on a 61-yard field goal. That'll hurt your feelings.
They lose on a game-winning field goal in Tampa.
Yeah. Well, they didn't deserve to win this game,
though. Of course they didn't. But the way the league works, you know?
It's crazy. Speaking of which, you don't want to spend a ton of money on ticket prices. No. Scuttlebucks presented by Fan Retreat. FanRetreat.com. That's a Florida company, my friends. It's like SeatGeek a little bit or Expedia, and they got the lowest ticket prices around. Check FanRetreat.com compared to, say, SeatGeek or StubHub. You'll find 95% of FanRetreat.com tickets. Well, they're cheaper, and that's because it's a local company with less overhead, and they pass those savings on to you. We'll talk to JoeBucksFan.com. That's Lita Kemper next on the Scuttlebucks. Now, renegades are the people with their own philosophies.
Avast ye scuttlebucks.
You know what's cool is that music plays on the Scuttlebucks. I'm watching a replay of Cameron Brate running over that poor defensive back. I think that was like the second quarter?
Yeah, it was first or second quarter.
Second quarter. That's just criminal what he does to that poor man.
Yeah, second quarter, you're right.
It's just wrong. I mean, that guy has time to break down and then still gets his ass trucked.
Well, Brate's tired of getting popped, you know, with contested catches. He wants to deliver some punishment, too.
Well, and he had a chance because it's a dime that Jameis throws on that cross, and he's got time to run and set that poor bastard up and deliver a shot. It's beautiful. Let's welcome him in, Lita Kemper, JoeBucksFan.com, the website. Hello, Lee.
Jeff, how's it going, man?
It's good. I'm watching replays of highlights from the Bucs game against the Giants as I talk to you, and it puts a smile on my face. When you go back and you look at all of this, and we always do this before we do the podcast, kind of check the good, the bad, and the ugly just to be sure we're sure of what we saw. It's fun when you go back and look at this game in particular. A lot of great throws, a lot of big moments. Really, the only downside is Nick Folk letting us down time and again and leaving all kinds of points out on the field. And then I know you want to talk about, I think we all have as Bucs fans, probably in the moment. I know it's on the website. I know certainly I've talked about it too on my show, and we're talking about it again here today on the Scuttlebucks. That asinine play call down at the one to the quiz. But other than that, it's a good day, and the Bucs get a much-needed win.
Oh, yes, sir. And I got a good one about Brate here. I thought this was hilarious. It sort of says something about New York tabloids and journalism as a whole, how it has devolved. New York Post wants to be, and I was in Chicago is somewhat the same way. I take a perverse amusement about how they tear apart their teams when they lose. I mean, tear apart. For example, Paul Schwartz, the New York Post, was doing, he was grading the Giants after the Bucs lost. And he in particular was going after Landon Collins, a Pro Bowl safety. And he said Collins had such a bad fourth quarter, quote unquote, he got burned by a backup tight end, which, of course, that was Cameron Brate.
Right.
And Cameron Brate just happened to lead the NFL in touchdowns last year. So if you're going to go after somebody, make sure the guy you use as a premise is a terrible player.
Yeah. And in fact, let me say this. To your point, and it's good that you're pointing that out because I like when you call out idiotic journalism. I would also note that Cameron Brate's a guy who is improving each game we watch him play. Cameron Brate was a guy that I described as Jameis made. That some guys that because Jameis is good and because Jameis checks at the line properly and understands how to read a defense, a lot of guys emerge as being NFL caliber or even slightly above average players when they're basically operating in a system run by a very smart quarterback. And that's anybody. That's any other player in other systems run with great quarterbacks too. But I think he's moved beyond that. I think he deserves a lot of credit. He's now a guy that actually isn't just a dependable guy because of hands or a tough guy that'll catch the ball in traffic. He's a guy that is becoming emerging a little bit more as a weapon, I'd like to say, instead of just a dependable pass catcher, if that makes sense to you.
Well, I'll just say great minds think alike because you pretty much parroted what Bill Polian said two nights ago. About
is that
Cameron
right?
Brate.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right. Excellent.
So, like I said, great minds think alike here, you know? And Polian was saying, and Polian worked the game. He was the analyst for ESPN Radio. Tom Lyon kept me off that year cohort.
Uh-huh.
I saw Polian in the press box. What's Polian doing here? That was odd. And I put that on Twitter, and Tom informed me via text message. But at any rate, Polian did say that, and to your point about Jameis made, you know, Brate was on with Polian on NFL Radio two nights ago, and Cutter has talked about this before, that for whatever reason, Jameis and Cameron Brate clicked first day. They clicked right away, and Brate was talking about to Polian, you know, that subject came up, like, you know, how did you and Jameis click? Why is there such a good connection between you two guys? And Brate said that, you know, he's got to work ethic as well, and he's always wanting to work extra after practice. And he said Jameis was more than happy to work however long Brate wanted to work after practice, 20 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes, going over red zone plays, constantly going over red zone plays. And I've seen it with my own eyes. Every practice, 20 minutes after practice, Jameis and Cam Brate, O.J. Howard's another guy, they stay after practice and they work on red zone plays. And so when you say Jameis made, that's very accurate because a lot of quarterbacks may not want to do that, but Jameis is all about working and teamwork. And, you know, if I got to spend 20 minutes to help you out, I'll spend 40 minutes. And that worked perfectly for Brate. And as you said, we're seeing the results because every game Brate gets better. And now he's a weapon, not just a dependable guy.
Does DeSean Jackson stay after practice?
Not like Brate. I know where you're going with that. Yeah, he'll work with the jugs machine. But, yeah, there's some chemistry issues there, I guess you could say, which is a little surprising to me because in training camp, I don't think I saw Jameis more than once the whole training camp overthrow DeSean Jackson. They were connecting right and left, right and left, and I thought, man, don't have to worry about any chemistry here. Well, you know, regular season comes around, it's a different animal. And now, I don't know how much of that is that teams are still scared of DeSean Jackson. They're rolling coverage on DeSean Jackson, which obviously is opening up the field for everybody, least of which is Mike Evans. That's exactly why the Bucs got DeSean Jackson, because people were rolling coverage on Mike Evans previously. Now, Evans has got a little room to roam. Same with Brate, same with O.J. Howard. And I guess, you know, DeSean is being, for lack of a better word, a victim of that, because he's got two or three guys on him. And I guess that's starting to get to Jackson's head. Now, Jackson just missed out on the blow-up on the sideline. That's overblown, blah, blah, blah. I just went the ball. And Todd Monken said, hey, there's only one ball to go around. We like it, but the guy's got a passion like that he wants to participate. He wants to be involved. Cutter basically says the same thing. Although Cutter's a little more critical of Jameis with this DeSean Jackson issue. He's like, hey, we got to get him the ball. And every once in a while, Cutter will point out a play that he said, hey, DeSean was right there. Jameis should have got him the ball. So it's an interesting dynamic to follow, but as always, winning is the greatest deodorant.
Well, you made the point at the outset of your answer, and I would like to believe that a vet like DeSean Jackson could get this figured out. It's not hard. Mike Evans has 19 receptions for 230 yards. Adam Humphries, 14 receptions for 156 yards. Cameron Brate, 10 receptions, 137 yards. This is what they're doing, right? They have opportunities because a guy like DeSean Jackson with that speed can lift the lid on a defense. They have to be wary of the long ball. That opens things up for other guys. It's actually quite the compliment to DeSean Jackson. So when I hear, when I hear him say, I wish I had an answer for you when he's asked about why the chemistry's lacking. Well, man, it's not rocket science. Those other guys were already here. He had a chemistry with them, and you possess the deep ball, the speed to lift the lid, as I just said. You know, obviously, that's going to provide opportunity. That's why you were brought in. Now, I know he wants the ball, and all receivers are prima donnas, and they want the ball. Yep. But it's just not that difficult to figure out. And we worried before the season, from a personality standpoint, would D-Jack get frustrated if he wasn't the focus, the number one guy? And we'll see. I hope he's able to be a professional. As he said, we're both professionals, and we'll deal with it. We're NFL players. We get paid to do a job, and we'll execute the plan, I think he said. Well, I hope so. But I do worry that if we get into week 5, 6, and 7, and there's a dearth of balls being thrown his way, if he's not going to be a little bit more vocal, and that might be a little bit frustrating. We'll have to see moving forward.
Sure. Now, here's the thing. He wanted to be here. He turned down more money from other teams, we learned. Obviously on Hard Knocks, I don't know if you caught this or not. I believe it was the first episode where he's playing with his kids at his pool.
Yeah.
And he's telling one of his kids, throw it like Jameis, throw it like Jameis.
Right.
So he like I said, if he's going to complain and whine and cry, dude, you wanted to come here. And obviously the Bucks wanted him. Obviously Jameis wanted him. Mike Evans wanted him. Everybody wanted him. But he came here. So if he's starting to whine, it's like, well, you made your own bed.
I hope not. I mean, I'll just say this. He's a good player. I mean, he's still got unbelievable speed for his age, and he can still be utilized in a way as we move on in this season. You know, there's an ebb and flow to things, and sometimes matchups dictate that. People know Mike Evans can kill him, and so, you know, I always worry that in certain matchups, a receiver is all right in, and other matchups not so much, and then they think it's going to be something that lasts throughout the season. We'll see moving forward. It looks like everybody has a good day against New England, so this should be another good day, offensively anyhow. This should be another good day for the Bucs, I'd like to believe.
You would hope so. And here's something that's very interesting. This crossed my mind as well, but I don't have the platform that Peter King has. Peter King was on Chris Russo's show yesterday on Sirius Radio, Mad Dog Radio, Russo has his own channel. Peter King's on there weekly. And Peter King said, Belichick is the kind of guy, he needs time to go over formats, go over game plans. He can fix just about everything, but he needs time to do it. And he said, Patriots on the road on a Thursday night game, that's not time. And I thought that was very, very interesting. And I know Belichick is I like to call him Belichick, of course. He's a very big buddy of Bobby Knight. So Bobby Knight was that very same way. If you were going to trip up Indiana back in their glory days, if you were going to trip up Indiana in the NCAA tournament, you had to get them on the second day. You know, they play, you know, 2 games in 3 days.
Right.
And whenever Knight got tripped up when Indiana was, you know, at their top, you tripped him up on the second game, not the first game, when he had 5 or 6 days to prepare. And the analogy is Belichick is the same way. You give him enough time, he'll find a way to stop you. But on the road on the Thursday night game, that may not be enough time for him to fix anything.
Here's the problem. Brady doesn't need a lot of time to pick apart a Buccaneers defense that if they aren't able to get home, and they're not, I got to imagine he's going to have a whale of a day, and that's every week for him right now. He is still playing at such an elite level at this age. It's unbelievable, but that would be a scenario that plays out. I don't know what's in your mind right now, but do you see this as a 35-31, 38-35 type game?
I was thinking that. I was thinking it was going to be a shootout, and I saw something on NFL Network this morning, Good Morning Football, that I'm going off the top of my head here. I'm not at a computer. Brady has like 1,230 yards passing already, if I'm correct. That's the second most he's ever had after 4 games in his career. Dude's 40 years old.
Yeah.
No, he's putting up those kind of numbers.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
And he doesn't have Randy Moss. I mean, he's amazing. It is. And when you watch them play, and I've watched a little bit of the Patriots this year, try to get in most of the games, even the condensed versions on the app there with the NFL.com. But he's making great throws in tight windows too. It's not just all schemed open. He's just able to make big time throws still. And that's what you think usually is going to begin to lessen as a guy gets older is the fastball, right? And he's still able to pipe it in there. So it's impressive.
I've got a Jameis angle with that. And I forgive me, I forget the guy's name. He's a running back from Penn State. He played with the Patriots, I think, for like three quarters of a year, got hurt. Well, anyway, the Bucs gave him a tryout, and he was trying out during rookie minicamp, Jameis's rookie year. And Jameis found out, hey, this guy played for the Patriots. So at a lunch break one time, Jameis sought the guy out, sat down at the table with him, and he told me, and again, I forget the guy's name, but he was a Penn State running back, that I remember. He said Jameis riddled him with questions nonstop for 20 minutes about Tom Brady. What does Brady do here? What does Brady do there? What is Brady? I mean, everything was Brady. And basically the guy told Jameis, because you want to be Tom Brady, you better be able to thread a needle from 30 yards on the guy's hands. Not numbers, his hands from 30 yards out. You have to be precise. And that's just what Brady is. He's precise.
Yeah, he is. Some thoughts about where we're at defensively. Some thoughts after this big win. It was a win we described on the last Scuttlebucks as very, very important, knowing that this game was looming large. And also just to get some confidence back after looking so bad against Minnesota. You just need to see a better performance. Obviously, Nick Folk's performance kind of chills you to the core. But he made the kick at the end that obviously he had to make. Barely, but he made it, and and the Bucs got a much-needed win.
Well, my thoughts on the defense is both heartening and frustrating at the same time. To me, if I had to pick an MVP of the defense, Brett Grimes.
Yeah, it's an easy
look
one, right?
Look at the difference that passes. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
Look at Minnesota. Grimes wasn't there. They got torn to shreds. Fast forward a week, Grimes is there. Everybody else, same defense that ended the game at Minnesota. Same defense, same personnel, night and day difference. I mean, Grimes did a number on Beckham that was just beautiful. And the guy's 34 years old. We're talking about Tom Brady doing what he does at 40. For Grimes to do what he does at 34, it's ridiculous. It was also heartwarming to see the linebackers without Lavonnie Davis, without Quan Alexander. Beckwith was a monster. Adarius Glanton, pretty darn good game. The linebackers really played well. That was heartwarming to see. The depth there, you could only drool at the thought of both David and Alexander coming back with Beckwith. That's sick, man. And Gerald McCoy was a monster himself. And then we go to the frustrating part. No pass rush. What pass rush? There was no edge rush. And Mike Smith, you could tell, is frustrated beyond words. You got to put some of the blame on the Bucs themselves. They were banking on Jackie Smith. Off-injured Jackie Smith. Banking on him coming back from major knee surgery. He's not ready yet. No offense. I feel awful for the guy. But you know what? He had shoulder surgery in the offseason. And both Steve Esbitz and I, my business partner, we wrote about this. Like, you know, we love Noah Spence. We love his heart. All the intangibles are great. But the guy's coming off shoulder surgery. And what happens the first play at Minnesota? Blows his shoulder out again. And now they have no edge rush. And when I say no edge rush, I mean none. Zero. They have one sack this year. That was Spence against the Bears. That's it. Dead last in the NFL. So, you know, the Bucs kind of made their own bed here with the pass rush. They decided to, you know, hedge their bets on Jackie Smith and Noah Spence. Where are they? Well, unfortunately, injuries cropped up. So, as much as I love Jason Light, you know what? He did nothing for the edge rush, and he put his chips in the middle of the table, hoping that Smith would come back injury-free, hoping that Spence's shoulder would be fine, and it blew up in his face. So, now, I mean, I'm to the point, and I've seen Belichick do this before, especially against Peyton Manning. He wasn't getting any pressure at the quarterback, so he said, to hell with it, and he dropped nine guys. Why can't the Bucs do that?
We may have to. It'll be interesting to see what Mike Smith does. Good talking to you, as always, Lee. And by the way, I'm going to take that last 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes of your diatribe on the defensive ends, and I don't mean that word negatively. And I'm just going to have it on loop for your entry every episode, because I love that your crusade. That's the hill you're going to die on, and I love that about you, good sir. Be well, and we will talk again next week.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Take care. You too. Yeah, man. They're not going to get a pass rush. It's not going to magically appear next week either.
Well, no.
Or tomorrow, or, yeah, no, it's not happening.
It's the one sack, and I saw ESPN put out a stat that said 16% of dropbacks are opponent quarterbacks pressured when the Bucs face them. So, you know, Brady gets through his progressions with a pass rush.
Yeah. No, he's freaking going to tear the Bucs apart because he tears everybody apart. You're not going to keep him down. Not without a complete team on defense. And, you know, teams that can get pressure. Well, listen, it's not rocket science. At the end of the day, you could be a Hall of Fame quarterback. You could be arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. When people are diving at your knees or they get pressure up the middle or they're able to close the pocket, limit time for you to sit back there and allow routes to develop. I don't care how good or accurate you are or how quick your release is. You're going to have a bad day. And the Bucs really don't have the means by which to do that.
Yeah, just consider how good that Carolina defense is and the fact that they can put up a lot of points, especially 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter when he has to have them. I mean, you know, he gets through his progressions unbelievably quickly. It's almost like, because I watched the Carolina game twice. I watched it live in the flow, and then I watched it this morning. And it's almost like, you know, when you get older, you say, man, I wish when I was a kid I knew this.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I do it in sports. You know, you watch something and you see a concept, you go, oh, man. Like when I played hockey, I said, it'd be roller or ice. But, man, if I knew, you know, this nuance right here,
this would change things.
Well, Brady's getting to do that because he's 40 and his body hasn't failed him yet. And he prepares. His mind is so sharp. It's that of a quarterback guru who breaks him down at 60 years old, and yet he's got the body to still wing the football to all parts of the field. He's got great footwork that gets him across the field in a moment's notice, and he throws lasers. He missed a couple of last week.
Oh, well, I mean, it's still a game where the other team's trying, and you're gonna have imperfections.
Right, but by and large, I mean, no. The dude looks just unflappable.
It's annoying.
Yes.
It's very annoying, and it's been going on for 20 years. I'd like it to end at some point. Now, luckily, they're not in our division. And this is just, you know, one of these games that happens to crop up on the schedule every now and again, and you're fine with it. It's actually kind of fun to test yourself. I think the Bucs should have great success moving the football against what right now is a pretty impotent New England Patriots defense. The problem is this. If you're trying to discern when things are going to turn around for segments of your team or theirs that are struggling, who are you betting on? Right, you're always going to bet on the Patriots because that's what they do. How many times have you watched the Patriots look like complete ass at the start of a season? I mean, it's happened at least 5 times in the last 8 years that people have written that article. The Patriots are done. Tom Brady's done. This is the year they fall. Somebody else is going to emerge. We've written that story. It's been written countless times. And the next thing you know, you fast forward, and it's week 14, and you're like, man, Patriots won 5 out of 6 and seem to be getting stops.
Yeah.
It just happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so if you're worried that things will get right and start to turn in the right direction, you never really know when that's going to happen for them, but you always bet that it will. Let's just hope it's not tomorrow.
Right. Our brethren in the AFC East down south, the Dolphins, know all about
that.
I mean, how many years was there another contender?
Always. And there have been moments where you've watched the Patriots, that Monday night game from a few years back.
Kansas City.
Well, they won the Super Bowl. They started 0-2 and won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And we were sitting there watching them going,
Brady did, in fact, look dead, though.
He looked terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. And that article was written, and Belichick and them just wore it and moved on and won the Super Bowl.
About every 20 football games, there's an article about Garoppolo or, you know, it was Mallet before or whoever.
Soon he's going to be the guy.
Well, the Patriots aren't afraid to trade Tom Brady because they know they have a younger kid
Man,
there.
Get the hell out of here with that nonsense.
He's as constant as the North Star, that guy.
You got no Garoppolo's just like, well, okay. A pretty good gig for me. I'll sit here and learn from the master, collect my paycheck, never play it down.
There's one reason I think, though, that the Bucs offense, it may not succeed as much as you think, as these teams have in the first 4 weeks of the season.
You want to get to that next? Is that a tease on the Scuttlebuck?
It could be.
How about that? We're going with it. We like to go with the non-traditional radio sort of efforts on a podcast because you can – well, you can shake off the shackles of conventional radio and do it any way you want. That's the beauty of a podcast. But not Tom. He's married to the traditions of radio, so we will use that tease and come back on the Scuttlebucks momentarily.
Fire the cannons. Plant the daggers.
There's the dagger! There's the dagger!
The Scuttle Bucks are back on JoeBucksFan.com. Here's Jeff Cameron and Tom Lang.
Got to admit, I'd give anything to be down there with you guys at Ray J tomorrow night, Thursday night. Obviously, depending on when you're listening to this. Because that's an atmosphere. That'll be fun. That's a fun game. And should the Bucks win it, you get that giddy feeling down deep in your soul with a little extra time to prepare.
Yeah, maybe this will be akin to some of those late 90s, early 2000s matchups where, you know, Monday night. Remember when Monday Night Football came back to Tampa Bay for the first time however long?
Giddy, right?
Yeah, I can remember I was at one of the classics. It was a Buccaneers and Rams game.
That's the Warwick Dunn game.
That is the work done game.
It's a great game.
With Sean King. He pitches it forward. He's dead to rights behind the line
of
scrimmage.
Game. I feel like I was watching that in my old apartment like it was yesterday.
Oh, man.
What year is that?
I was in middle school, so 2000, 2001? Probably 2000.
That's crazy. You were in middle school.
Yeah, my parents let me go, and I was tired as hell the next day because by the time you get home, it's 1, 2 in the morning, but I was so thankful. Marshall Faulk went nuts that night.
No, I remember the game like it was yesterday. Literally, I think I was at the tail end of living in an apartment with my buddy, Matt. And then not long after that, I meet the love of my life and get married. So I can remember this well.
Sure. And man, you know, I hear some people down there already, and maybe a famous outlet or not, saying this is the most anticipated home game in history.
No.
There have been playoff games.
Yeah. We won a Super Bowl in the franchise history here, folks. Well, and I know that wasn't a home game. I'm saying, but on the way to that, you played some pretty big games.
Games against the Eagles. There have been games. I mean, the Packers in the mid to late 90s.
Yes.
The Vikings, there was a great. Anyway, so there are any number of games. But this one is anticipated, and this one hopefully is electric. My only worry, I saw it was sold out a couple of weeks ago. You know, there are a lot of Giants fans,
a lot of New England fans.
It's just the nature of our market. You know, there are a lot of transplants.
People move to Florida, get out of the cold, yes.
Yeah, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of cheers in the stands if and when they score some touchdowns tomorrow night.
I keep saying this, by the way, and I know that you can't count the chickens, but I mean, or the eggs before they're hatched. I don't know what I'm doing with chickens. Sorry about that. But New England, if you get this win, you're 3-1, and you play Arizona on extra rest.
Yeah.
You know, I know Arizona, when you see the name and you remember the game that they just had against us, where we should have had a touchdown early, Evans loses the ball in the lights, and then it's just a bad day from that point forward.
It was out there again last year.
Yeah, it was awful. But the point would be, if you've watched Arizona this year, they're not any good, like at all. And you got extra time to prepare for them. I'm just saying you could be staring at 4-1 very easily, Tom.
Yeah, here's the problem, though.
The league, and you shouldn't assume anything. Well, I agree.
Well, yeah. That's not what I was alluding to last segment, you know, as my voice cracks, about, you know, New England's defense and what it does and what it doesn't do. Yes, it breaks down, you know, in coverage down
frequently,
the field. It does. But I have to say that if you're looking at the offenses that New England has gone against in the first 4 weeks of the season, you know, they're in the dome against in New Orleans in week two, and that's more of a traditional offense. They're going to wing it around. Breeze throws for about 360. They come up short a couple times in the red zone, and that's key for this week. I think they attempted 3 field goals in the game. You can't do that. It's going to be a shootout. No. But you look at what Kansas City did in week one, what Houston did with Deshaun Watson, and then obviously what Carolina did last week. I mean, you've got 2- and 3-man backfields, a ton of motions pre-snap. You're trying to set up eye violations with those offensive principles. The Buccaneers don't run that type of offense. It's more of a straight-ahead, pro-style offense, 2 and 3 wide. You're running straight at you with Doug Martin. They'll give up plays in all phases of offenses. But it seems to me like New England is having a lot of trouble with option-type looks, RPO-type looks, and I just wonder if Tampa has installed something for that. But that's not really our bread and butter of what we do.
No, but you do have a DeSean Jackson that you're trying to get involved in this offense.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to run something gimmicky here, you could in sort of a Tyreek Hill sort of deal. By the way, let's not forget that while Tyreek Hill went nuts against New England, Kareem Hunt was the story of the day, 148 right at you.
Yeah.
You know, Lamar Miller had a decent day. I'm just saying right now the Patriots have given up 42, 20, 33, and 33. just not the mark of a very good defense right now.
Right, but what I'm getting at is,
those teams did some things.
Zone read looks, pre-snap jet motions.
We don't do that. I know.
Pitches. You know what I mean? We'll run an end. We showed the end around against Jacksonville in week two of the preseason. And then we had a throwback this weekend, O.J. Howard, that's still wide open.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That was a great play call. So I'm not saying Dirk is not creative. All I'm saying is his hallmarks, his offensive style, don't mirror those of three of the four previous opponents for New England. So if the Bucs are going to win this thing, they're going to have to scheme up some different looks than what we've seen so far in the first 3 weeks of the season.
Here's the fear, and it's the time of the show where we say goodbye and give the prediction. By the way, Joe Bucs fan alluded to it, Lee DeKemper, wanting to know Brady's numbers. And right when you're about to maybe pick the Bucs in an upset, my man has gone ahead and dropped down with some games this year at 388, 447, 378, and 307. He's also done that with 10 touchdowns and zero interceptions. That's 1,400 yards passing with a quarterback rating of 117.
He looks incredible.
It's just dumb. It's just dumb what he's doing. And I know Brent Grimes being back makes a difference, but us not being able to get pressure also makes a difference. And I just feel like I can't go against him. I'm going to pick the Patriots. You know, I did pick the Bucs to beat the Giants. I worried about – no, I didn't, did I? Did I take the Giants? I couldn't remember what I did last week.
I think you picked the Bucs to beat the Giants.
I couldn't remember.
You had us at 2-2 in the W's and L's anyway with the loss to Minnesota.
Somewhere in there. I knew I had us losing to Minnesota. I was kind of hit and miss on the Giants game. I'm going to take the Patriots here. I'm wrong. I hope. Really wrong. Want to be wrong. If the Bucs beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, that's good news indeed. I think certainly Tampa Bay can. But I'm going to say we lose a close one.
Well, here's another time that your offense needs to score in the upper 20s, lower 30s to win this game.
I think they will.
Sure, it could be a slop fest from...
I'm going to need my kicker to make some kicks.
Well, yes. But the thing is, you can't be settling for a lot of threes.
No, but you if you got sevens. Points, if you have a chance to score, you need to be able to do that. So a 48-yard field goal, you need to make that.
You need a couple of things to go your way here. Some fumble luck, maybe a batted pass, you get a turnover. Because, I mean, if it's different and the Buccaneers defense shows up and prevents New England from dropping a 40 bomb on you the way that Atlanta did last year, and they could have scored a hell of a lot more on Thursday Night Football in Tampa Bay. I mean, that's what we're looking for here. For me, I'm not expecting a win. I want to see progress on defense. Hopefully there's a little bit more pressure on the quarterback. Again, the number from last segment, 16% of dropbacks. That's our pressure rate. That's absurdly bad. And I get it. New England's offensive line hasn't been as great in pass protection this year.
World-class bad.
But, I mean...
the Giants' offensive line wasn't great. Still didn't get pressure.
Oh, Eric Flowers was, yes, the punchline of the league, right?
Yes.
Outside of him not blocking one guy on a run play, and then I think it was Robert Ayers gets in the backfield and blows it up in the backfield, he really wasn't circled all day long. So color me really, really concerned. I just think this thing's New England all the way. They're dropping 35, 40 points in this game.
Yeah, I think the score – well, they do that against everybody. It won't be a sign of shame. I mean, they even in losing effort last week, they scored 33 points – or 30 points. I think –
wouldn't it be great if the offense could, you know, get a stop, or you get a stop on defense, but you can put up a two-score run on them and get up 10 or something along those lines? If you could play from in front, you might have a chance here.
Got an opportunity. By the way, I shouldn't have done this. I went down a rabbit hole while we were talking here. I just was looking up a statistic about Brady, and then it just led to all these other statistics that I think I'm too annoyed to normally look at, because who wants to look at Tom Brady kicking ass all the time? But just do yourself a favor and go back and look at Patriots, Tom Brady's seasons, each of the last, 6 years.
Well, look at his third down rate this year, too. That's the
other
thing.
It's just the dumbest thing you'll ever see. It's not even close.
I believe I saw a number this week that said he's over 130 in quarterback rating on third down, and the Bucs don't exactly. The Bucs were best in the league last year in getting off the field in third down. Now they're allowing 50% conversion rates. It's just they're going to have to play above what they've shown so far on defense for us to have a chance.
I'm going to sample one here for you. 2015, completed 65% of his passes for 4,770 yards, 36 touchdowns to 7 picks. Just have yourself a 2015. Oh, by the way, 2014, 65%, 4,109 yards. What was it, 35 touchdowns, 9 picks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can keep going. It's just not pretty, man.
Yeah.
For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Thanks for listening to the Scuttlebucks. Go Bucks. We'll talk to you next week.